My family, I'm an addict named George.
Hi, George.
You want to thank God for allowing me to get safely over the highways and the byways. I want to thank the Laurel Mountain area for inviting me back to share my experience, strength, and hope on the gift of recovery. They gave me the mature step, you know, the 12th step. And I don't really believe you can really get to the 12th step, which talks about, you know, having an awakening of the spirit, you know, and carrying this message to the addict that still suffers. And if you're new, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. This is the most loving, caring, greatest show on earth. You know, when I came to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, it definitely lived up to us with it, to the promises that it promised me. It was the end of loneliness. You know what I mean? It did that for me. I really didn't understand what was going on with me before I got to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I really start getting myself together when I found myself in this fellowship, was sticking my head in this fellowship, you know, coming out of a rehab. You know, I got clean. Well, I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in Lynchburg, Virginia, probably 1989. You know, my clean date is January 5th, 1991. So obviously I didn't get it right away because I really was still equating the world, and I was equating intelligence, and I was equating everything based on A's and B's in school, you know, and being able to have a job, and, you know, but one thing I couldn't figure out, you know, and I learned as a result of the program of Narcotics Anonymous, a problem is something that you can't figure out on your own. And I could figure out a whole lot of things, but I could not figure out how to keep that stem out my mouth. I mean, I put that stem in my mouth from Lynchburg, Virginia. I ran to North Carolina. I ran to D.C., and I ran back and forth to Pittsburgh for a number of years trying to figure it out. I tried to run to the Army. I even joined the church, sang in the choir. Embarrass myself. You know, I was trying to stop using, man, but I couldn't stop using. You know, and then I stumbled into this program again because thank God for H&I. H&I introduced me to the program of Narcotics Anonymous in Lynchburg, Virginia. That was the last place I wanted to go, but it was a place I needed to be. Both of my children were born there. I remember being in that rehab, and this guy came in and said, y'all don't know shit about life. Shut the fuck up. You don't know what, it was about 1988, 89. Like, he kind of bullied us. I mean, he came in talking stuff, and it was the truth. You know, but, you know, I was still closed-minded and totally self-centered and self-absorbed and still equating success based on jobs, material possessions. And I remember, like, getting out of that rehab, having expectations, because they teach you a lot of stuff in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. They say expectations is a setup for resentment. You know what I mean? I expected my in-laws to invite me back in because I went to a rehab. And when they told me, I don't know where you're going to go, but you can't come back here, yeah. Then my feelings was hurt. And I didn't know how to deal. You know what I mean? I got back. This was it. I got on a Greyhound bus, came back to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and said, I'm going to hurt myself by using.
Yeah.
And I did that. You know, and I used a couple times, and I began to realize, I ain't going to get my family back if I keep using. It ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? I knew I had a problem long before I could stop using. Then I remembered them people in the rehab said, go to NA. So I decided to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And in Narcotics Anonymous, they introduced me to the problem, which was basically my solution. You know, addict ain't no problem. It's a diagnosis. When you get with it, I was diagnosed. I had to diagnose myself that I was exactly what Who's an Addict said I was. I lived to use and used to live. You know what I mean? I put my welfare, my family, my freedom, my life on the line to get one. So I was really identifying in Who's an Addict. I was identifying when being reduced to the animalistic level. I was identifying a lot of things that chapter told me. Then it told me, like, why am I here? And then it told me, like, you know, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program? And it's a program, it's a fellowship of men and women who drugs have became a major problem. I'm like, shit, I'm in. And I came to the fellowship. I began to identify with the literature of Narcotics Anonymous. They began to help me begin to, like, understand that I'm not stupid, that I didn't suffer moral deficiency, that I wasn't retarded, you know what I mean, that I wasn't a bad guy. Told me that I was an addict, and it really began to take some of the shame and the guilt off of me, you know, because each step, and by identifying what you are, you begin to awaken your spirit, because a spiritual awakening is nothing but a better perspective on life. Narcotics Anonymous began to give me a better perspective on my life, and a better perspective on who I am, and a better perspective on what I suffer from. I didn't realize I suffered from the disease of addiction. Then I got in touch with, like, if you want what we have to offer, and are willing to make the effort to get it, these are the steps that made recovery possible. So I fell up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I began to get comfortable in this fellowship. You know, I did what y'all told me to do, because when I'm scared, I take direction. My problem is when I get comfortable, I get arrogant, I start relying on that old worldly stuff that says you're intelligent, that you got it going on, and I find myself in a hopeless dilemma over and over again. You know, so I really got in touch with that type of stuff once I got here. And you know, the first step told me that I was powerless over my addiction, that my life was unmanageable. When I first got here, I heard drugs. You know, I heard drugs. That's what I thought I was powerless over. But what I realized as I begin to understand is I equate with that if I tear the corner of this paper off, that's my drug. That's my drug problem. And the rest of the paper is my insides. And they were all balled up. And the first step began to help me smooth out the raggedness inside of me. It began to let me identify that, you know, I was powerless over this thing called the disease of addiction and that my life was totally unmanageable. It began to help me to begin to understand what was really going on. And then I learned to, like, work this program long before I understand it, like the second step talks about. It said, you'll learn to use this power long before you understand it. I start tapping into this fellowship, and one of the most wonderful things this program did for me to waken my spirit and give me some insight and understanding that I was really, like, getting into this program. Because when you knew, making a meeting, staying away from old people, places, and things, and not picking up, you're working all 12 steps with the drug. Then you got to start working with the disease of addiction. Then I had to start working with my character flaws. You know, then I had to start working in every area of my life. But it really helped me. Like, I didn't understand that I was working this program, because fear will make you do the right thing sometimes. When you get the right pain and the right fear, it just forces you to a state of humility. Because you get tired of wanting to be humiliated. You know what I mean? And you know, so when I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, my first friend, I'm from Homewood, one of the toughest neighborhoods in Western Pennsylvania. People die every day there. And they've been dying every day there for years. You know what I mean? It's a rough part of town. You know what I mean? And I walked into the fellowship, and I survived in Homewood. I only got beat up one time. You know what I'm saying? And I underestimated him because he was younger than me, and he beat me up. So I realized, don't ever underestimate. That was one of those street lessons I got before I got to the program of Narcotics. But I stumbled in the program, man, afraid, desperate, needing a way out. And my best friend walking in was a little gay guy. And I wasn't gay. I was full of ego and image. I was fatally hip and internally cool. But I walked into the program of Narcotics Anonymous with a gay man. And we hung tight. And like, he was my man. And I'm going to tell you something. The message was, you know what I mean? He taught me more about being a man than any straight man ever taught me. You know, because what he began to begin to teach me is how to identify how I feel. See, identification is when we come to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. We don't come here to compare. We come here to identify and relate. And through his ability to talk about his feelings, I was relating and identifying my feelings, because it was really my feelings that was trapping me off, getting me in trouble. So I'm working the second step, and then, you know, I got to the program, and I didn't understand. They talk about the first step, the void comes. Then we got to learn how to fill the void and not fill it. I don't even know how to fill the void with old street stuff. So I came here married, wife and two kids, you know what I mean? Faithful, committed husband in addiction. Get into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, become unfaithful, because I didn't really know how to fill the void. Now, I didn't know how to fill the void with the second step, and I filled the void with the program. So I was running around the program of Narcotics Anonymous, trying to be fatally hip and internally cool, and I didn't know I was, and like, the program was like building, lighting my spirit, and the disease is trying to put it out at the same time. And that's why they say sponsorship is the heartbeat. See, if you want your heart to beat in this program, they said those that use sponsorship get the most from the program. You know what I mean? And so I had to really start fooling around here for about 18 months and almost got high. And I began to realize that's when sponsorship really began to work for me. That's when I began to use this power long before I really understood this power. So I began to allow this man to be able to guide me through the 12 steps. And I remember, man, he did a third step with me. He took me to a church. He put me on my knees, and we said a third step prayer. And in that third step prayer, my life changed. Something on the inside of me changed. I was no longer trying to be slick, happy, and cool in this program. I was no longer, and see, the restoration to sanity is the things that I thought was cool was really devastating to people and devastating to me. I no longer wanted to cheat on my woman. I no longer wanted to do slick stuff. I no longer, when the gunshot went off, I no longer wanted to run and see who got shot. I learned how to start walking away from danger. That's a sign of restoration, when you walk away from danger instead of running toward it. You know what I mean? And that's what began to happen to me in this third step. But in that fourth step, I had those bugaboos, those secrets that I didn't want to tell nobody. Those little secrets, like when we was little boys, we rubbed our pee-pees on each other and we did things. And I remember doing that one and got caught. And I was embarrassed. And that was shameful. Yeah. And I tucked that in. They didn't want to tell nobody. They said, you sick as your secrets. And one of those things that, because of that experience, You want to run around. This disease tell you got to prove that you're something that you're not. So I had to prove to myself that I wasn't, because I had that little experiment growing up as a child. My head told me, you might be gay. When the girl don't dance with you, maybe you might be gay. Maybe even though I was hanging out with a gay guy, you might be gay. But I know I'm not gay. So they say, because in our fourth step, we begin to sort through the contradiction and the confusion in our life, because the disease of addiction confuses you. It keeps you off balance. And that's why you get caught up with bugaboos and patterns of behavior. And that's why it was really important for me to really, like, take a journey on the inside and begin to look at the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, begin to look at the patterns of my life, begin to realize that my first issue through my fourth step taught me that I'm gullible. That's my first issue. I'm easily influenced to do something negative. I realized that. I realized being, because I really never wanted to, but I was always afraid. I really didn't understand that I was full of raging self-obsession and gut-wrenching insecurity. You know what I mean? So I began to tell the truth about me in the fourth step. The biggest thing my first fourth step taught me, anytime it got difficult, I took my ball and went home. Mm-hmm. Anytime it got hard, when I couldn't figure it out, I would take my ball and leave, man, in every area of my life. I did it with women that hurt my feelings a little bit. I took my ball and left. I did it. I was a very good athlete growing up. I was a very good basketball player growing up. But I wasn't coachable. Anytime the coach wouldn't meet my expectations, I would quit. I ruined the college career. I ruined the opportunities. So I began to realize in my fourth step, man, that, boy, when it gets tough, well, you always quit. And only until I found the program of Narcotics Anonymous, this has been the only thing to help me not quit. This has been the only thing that not helped me quit. So if you knew, quitting is getting high when you come to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. If you get high, you just quit. You know, you quit believing in the process. You quit believing that this program works. If you quit, you quit believing in yourself if you quit. And those are the things I had to tell myself. And I learned how not to quit. I learned how to start asking for help. You know what I mean? So I did that fifth step with him. And it began to tell me in that fifth step that the mask had to go, that I was hiding a shaky, insecure guy on the inside, appearing to be confident on the outside. That was my story. I always had the latest, still do that, you know what I mean? But I learned how to get honest. You know, I learned that humility is like air and water is the life in this process, that humility is like going as far as you can on your own power. If you want to keep getting down the road of recovery, you got to ask for some help along the way. That's what it taught me, man. You know, that's what my sixth step taught me. And that's what my seventh step taught me. And you know what I did? I created some damage and harm. So I began to realize people be thinking harm is a physical thing. But harm is a mental thing. Harmful dependency. Harmful dependency ain't got nothing to do with heroin, cocaine, or alcohol, or pills. Harmful dependency is based on how you're thinking. My thinking puts me in position to fall short and make mistakes and hurt myself. So it was the way I was thinking. So I had to really get in touch with the patterns of my behavior, my eighth step, and the damage, the harm that I caused myself and others. I'm not the type of guy, my story ain't dirty needles, jail cells, and eating out of dumpsters. Because if you're new, you don't got to have a dirty story, because we tend to want to compare when we come here. Your story is good enough and painful enough to keep you in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what I really got out of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It began to allow me to start really like looking at the patterns of my behavior and the harm that I caused myself. Because the harm I caused myself the most is wanting to be like somebody else and not be myself. I was afraid to be myself. I found out in this process, through a spiritual awakening, an authentic recovering addict is a person who has the ability to be who he is and don't try to be anybody else other than yourself. You know, that's the greatest gift of this program is self-acceptance. When you can begin to accept yourself on a deep level. So I had to begin to look at the patterns of behavior in the eighth and the ninth step. And I begin to get free, because the ninth step is really designed to give you freedom from yesterday. Because the sixth and the seventh step then gave you the humility to go do what you need to do. The first step, and who's in that, gave me the identification of what was going on with me. See, the steps for me begin to eliminate a lot of shame and guilt in my life. The steps of Narcotics Anonymous put me in a position to learn how to be human. One of the most tricky things that I've learned in this process, because you keep hearing it's a spiritual program. So you walk around and try to be spiritual and forget about being human. So when you're human and show up and you make a mistake, you want to run into isolation, because the key to the disease of addiction I believe God gives life and God takes life. I believe the disease of addiction's job is to make you suffer. You know, it's even telling us in the literature, we suffer from the disease of addiction. You know what I mean? Because you can't even leave here without God's permission. Because each and every one of us was throwing bricks at the penitentiary and trying to kill ourselves. All of us was playing Russian roulette with our life. And without God, wouldn't even let us go, because you can't leave here without his permission. And I really begin. So what would happen, George, if you start cooperating? What will happen to your life if you start cooperating? Well, I wasn't cooperating with God. I was operating everything off my feelings and on my image and my ego. You know, but what if I would cooperate? And the only way I could cooperate in this process is really exercise humility on a regular basis. And humility is not letting nobody slap you. Humility is not about keeping your mouth shut. Humility is taking an honest assessment of who you are and where you are and doing what you need and responding appropriately to that. That's humility for me. So I begin to like make this amends to myself and begin to make these amends to the people that I've harmed. The ninth step is a powerful step. It will begin to like, your spirit will like just burst with joy. Because I found out in the ninth step, it's very powerful. The disease of addiction will trap you off clean. I remember going to my in-laws because my in-laws bailed me and my wife out over and over and over again. And when you consider yourself a man's supposed to be the head of his household. You know what I mean? So every time I would go to my in-laws' house, because I was in the grip of addiction, I would always find myself isolated in the basement, even though I was clean. And I began to realize, man, that I was still being controlled by shame and guilt. And so I had to really, like, practice the program of Narcotics Anonymous and go up the steps and take full responsibility for the man that I wasn't when I married their daughter. I said, you know what? You know what? I owe you an amends. I hope you can forgive me. You know, I wasn't the man that I needed to be for my children. I wasn't the man that I needed to be for your daughter. And I hope that you can forgive me. And freedom came from my past. It allowed me to sit at the table and laugh and enjoy the family. The steps of Narcotics Anonymous will like bring your spirit alive if you have the courage to practice them. So I had to have the courage to go up there and make an amends to my in-laws, make amends to my mother, make amends to myself, make an amends to my wife, make an amends to my children, make an amends to my community, make an amends to the God of my understanding. You know what I mean? I had to make an amends in all these areas of my life to have contentment and peace. So you can't get no peace and contentment until you really start exercising that amends process. Now, that 10th step keeps me on point. And I tell people my 10th step is really my wife. Tell you something, because I still want to be a little boy. My wife holds me accountable to the position. See, we talk about husband, that's a position. We talk about man, that's a position. We talk about recovering addict, that's a position. I had to start getting in touch with the positions that I was in, the titles that I have, the titles that I want to have, and how I want to carry these titles. What kind of man you really want to be, George? You know, what kind of man you really want to be? Because Narcotics Anonymous gives you the opportunity, now that you're free from drugs, now that you understand what you suffer from, now it's giving you an opportunity to reinvent yourself here and be exactly who you want to be. I decided that I always wanted to be a good man. I always wanted to be a good friend. The disease of addiction just kept robbing me from the ability to do that on a consistent basis. But I always wanted that. I only wanted one woman to love me just for me. The thing is, I never really believed it. And even with clean time and even with doing good, something about self-loathing and self-hate still is inside each and every one of us. And it's very difficult to believe that somebody can love you just for you. When my wife is being too nice, I'm like, this bitch has done something. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just really hard to believe that somebody can just love you for you. I'm not Mr. Lover Man. I ain't doing it all night long. You know what I'm saying? I ain't Big Daddy Kane. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, I begin to realize doing a proper inventory, because you got to learn how to do a proper inventory in this process. And I begin to realize, this woman loved me just for me. I ain't got no money. So she's loving me for me, and it's difficult to believe. And I heard this the other day. It's difficult to find happiness on the inside, but it's impossible to find it on the outside. Yes, right? It's difficult to find it from the inside. And they're telling us that this process of happiness comes from the inside out. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult, but it's possible to find happiness. You know, but it's impossible to find it on the outside. Mm-hmm. And that's a real statement, because the more I look out, looking for people, places, and things to fill this void inside of me, to make me feel happy, to bring me joy, I always find myself disappointed. So what I began to realize, man, that in this relationship with God in the 11th step, you know, because I began to improve my relationship with God, because I start asking God out of fear in the third step, in the first step. Now I want to improve in the 7th step. Now I'm asking God out of fear. You ever have a 6-step experience? A 6-step experience is, say, God, if you get me out of this shit, I swear I ain't gonna do that no more. You gotta get there in areas of your life. You know what I mean? That's when you become entirely ready. You know what I'm saying? And man, those entirely ready experiences, this is when you really begin to develop a relationship with God. I think a real relationship with God starts in the seventh step. Because it's my painful experiences that push me closer to God. Because when I'm doing good and I got money, I suffer from a disease that when I got money in the bank, I get a shot every now and then, and a couple of y'all stroke my ego, I think I'm doing something. So God got to always remind me, I run this. He always got to remind me that I run this. You know, they talk about a 6 and 7. This separates the boys from the men. People make mistakes. Do I have the humility to come up and own the mistakes that I make? You know what I mean? And in my mistakes, and in the pillow talking to me at night, this is what helps me get a relationship with God. Now I want to improve my relationship with God because I don't want to be running to God just out of fear anymore. I want to run to God because I want to be all I can be for God. And so I need to improve this relationship with God. And I found out in this process, how can you pray to something you don't even got a name on it? The 11th step is a personal journey. It's a personal spiritual journey. And people get there in different times and different places. And that's the beautiful thing about Narcotics Anonymous. That's the beautiful thing about this program, because you're going to find yourself here for some time. It's like, is this what it's all about? Is this it? There's nothing left of this. And what I found out, it's about God, and it's about love, and it's about service. You know what I mean? That's what life is really all about. The greatest gift is in giving, not getting. Through my inventory, when I'm waiting to get something, shit don't come fast enough. You know, through my inventory, once I get it, the euphoria, the novelty of it wears off right away. But something about helping somebody, something about giving, you just feel good when you lay down at night. No, you've really been in service to another human being that you authentically helped them to have like a awakening of their spirit. It's a great feeling, man. No, this 12th step is about carrying this message, man. And this 12th step is about carrying this message to the addict that still suffers and it doesn't have anything to do with clean time. It's about, because I'm a newcomer if I get divorced. Because I ain't never been divorced. Mm-hmm. So if that happens, I'm going to be a newcomer in that experience. Mm-hmm. You become a newcomer in experiences, not with time.
That's right.
Time don't got nothing to do with being a newcomer. You know, just when you get introduced to the program, it's new experiences that you've not walked. That's the beautiful thing about this fellowship. They say we ease the pain of living through spiritual principles, but this fellowship helps us to get through life. See, you know, if I know my man Phil, because I've made enough meetings to meet Phil, and if I know Phil put shingles on the roof, I know something about this fellowship. We love to help each other. This program, this is the only place we love to help each other. Everybody else wants something from you, trying to get out on you, trying to beat you, trying to increase their profit margin or something. It's real world vicious. But in this fellowship, when you got an authentic relationship with people in this fellowship, and people respect you and appreciate you, they're willing to help you. So y'all have eased the pain of living. You hear people say, I owe my life to Narcotics Anonymous. I owe my life to Narcotics Anonymous. I owe my life to Narcotics Anonymous in God. Everything that I have is a result of the program of Narcotics Anonymous in God. You know, everything that I have is a program of Narcotics Anonymous. My wife is a recovering addict. Thank God. Because when you thank people, you thank God. My wife's a recover, not an addict that's clean, a recovering addict. I mean, she got principles in her life. She allowed me to be who I am, and I allow her to be who she is. She's free, and I'm free. I got one brother. One brother. We was like this growing up. He got 19 years clean in this process. And I'm blessed. I got two children. They ain't never been in no trouble. My kids went to the Wilkinsburg School District, one of the worst school districts. I'm trying to tell you something about a spiritual awakening. You got to thank God. You got to thank the program of Narcotics. I got two kids because Narcotics Anonymous, tell me when I got to sit down, created an atmosphere. Because they say a home group.
Yeah.
Supposed to be a place of safety, you know, where a place of love and acceptance. You know what I mean? So I had to take that information from Narcotics and I made my home a place of safety and acceptance. I allow my kids to be who they are. What I found out about this thing, man, is that if I'm living right, my kids can hang out with me all the time. My kids couldn't hang out with me when I'm trying to hit a stem, trying to hit a bust a move, you know what I'm saying? Right. Go in the room, you know, blah, blah. Right. But I found the program in Narcotics Anonymous and decided I want to live right and be the best man I can be. My kids can hang out with me no matter where I go. Because I ain't trying to go to where it's going to put harm to me or them. So I created an atmosphere where my kids can be themselves. And it's been a beautiful thing. Because we come up, where kids were supposed to be seen and not heard. So we couldn't go talk to our parents about what's really going on. But my kids, some of us was brought up where our parents put fear in us. I put no fear in my kids. I just put love and acceptance in my kids. My daughter came out. She's a lesbian. She's lesbian. You know what I mean? She was 15 years old. She wasn't afraid to talk about her feelings and her sexual drives and urges. You know, because we create an atmosphere of safety and love. And we embraced that and accepted that. My son, when he was 16 years old, you know, he said, "Ma, Dad, all my friends are selling drugs and they got nice things." I told my kid, "If you don't sell drugs, I'll buy you anything you want. You keep getting A's and B's. If your kid is getting A's and B's in school, you should give them everything they ask for, because they keeping the end of the deal. Because all we ever want our kids to do is keep their rooms clean and get good grades." So I rewarded my children for the good deeds. So then I told, because we talked. I couldn't talk to my mother about the things that was going on in the inside of me. Because I was afraid to talk, because something about honesty, where I grew up at, you got punished for being honest. So why the hell you want to be honest? So when we come to the program of Narcotics Anonymous and find out honesty is an indispensable principle that you got to have in order to stay on the road of recovery. So being honest is an ongoing process. But as a result of the program of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, we was able to put those indispensable principles in that atmosphere in my household, and my children thrive in a hostile environment. My son came from Wilkinsburg High School, went to Villanova University, got his master's degree. Working on his doctorate degree right now. You know what I mean? And you know, they ain't addicts. My son smoke weed. So do my daughter. But you know, it ain't a problem until you begin to have problems. Everybody ain't an addict. So because this is about attraction rather than promotion. So we carry this message by not browbeating. We carry this message by being examples of what the program of Narcotics Anonymous can do for you. You know, my children watch me and their mother every morning on our knees before we start our day out. My kids pray. I'm going to tell you something about the program. You'll find your kids will be sharing the message to their friends. I hear my kids be talking about acceptance. You got to live just for the day when they talk to their friends. You know, a day at a time. You know what I mean? They be talking about what we learned here in the program. It's a powerful. We carry this message not to the addict that still suffers. We care and share with others the NA way. That's what this is really all about, that we can take this information that's contained in the 12 steps, the language of narcotics, we can take this information and we can go out in society and make a difference. You know, the 12th step is the most powerful 12th step is not what you say, but what you do. So I found that I've been clean going on 25 years now. You know, I don't do a whole lot of talking to me. My 12th step is that I still show up with almost 25 years clean. That's my message. Did I show up? Did I show up and be visible and available for service? Because it's not always about going to the meeting and getting something. Sometimes my purpose is to go there and give something. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's what this is all about. Because when you're always about getting, you ain't going to get all the time. Mm-hmm. I found out as soon as I think I ain't going to get, that's when God showed me you can get it here too. But this is a powerful program, man. Having a spiritual awakening, I have a better perspective on my life. The caterpillar has transformed into a butterfly. Because a caterpillar's perspective changes when they go through that metamorphosis. The program of Narcotics Anonymous and the 12 steps is a transforming process that turns us into butterflies. When we came in crawling low on our bellies, now we're flying high through life. That's what this program will do for you. When you got that, when you connected to the right power, you'll find yourself performing tasks far beyond your capacity. You find yourself doing things you could never do before. I've been married for 31 years in two days. 31 years to my wife in 2 days. I've been in this program almost 25 years. I've not stepped outside my relationship in 23 years. When you somebody that was fatally hip and internally cool, somebody that travels all over the country and put themselves in ego-inflating situations, you know, it's because being connected to the right power. And I found out, I found out that in this process, we have to rid ourselves of our resentments. Resentments give us the excuse to act out. And I tell my wife all the time, I don't take your inventory, but you be busy taking mine. And I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that. You know what I mean? I don't point out her defects, but she kind of points mine out. And I'm all right with that because I get the benefits of that stuff. You know, I end up like, it helps me stay on the path of recovery. It helps me stay in a posture of humility. It helps me stay in my position of wanting to be a good man. So if somebody's taking your inventory, part of the spiritual awakening is that you have to be open to constructive criticism, because we're just all projects being built. There's no complete finished product here in the program on our cosmos. This is learning how to be a man, learn how to be a lady school. You know, it was an honor and a privilege for me to drive down here. It was beautiful coming here, seeing the fog on the Laurel Highland Mountains coming. It was a beautiful thing. I like traveling by myself, me and God. I really do. This is a beautiful day. It's a beautiful time. You know, thanks for allowing me to share. I'll keep coming back.
I'd like to thank George for sharing. Now we have our second speaker, be Lori W. from the Rise and Shine Group of NA in the Northeast area.
I'm Lori, I'm an addict. I asked George to go first. I knew he'd prime the pump. And basically, he's good at that. You know, I really have a lot of respect for George, and I appreciate him because anytime Narcotics Anonymous calls that I know of, he shows up. And that is an expression of gratitude. The essence for me of the 12th step is that if I'm grateful for the transformative process that has occurred in my life through the process of working the 12 steps, then I need to display that. I need to show that. Action needs to be the order of the day. Today's Just for Today reading talked about action. You know, our actions, our motives. I was introduced to this fellowship around the same time as George. My clean date's May 30th of 1991. So in May, I celebrated 24 years. I'm working on 25 years. George and I have a lot in common in that regard. I have a lot of respect for his wife as well, beautiful woman. I like this atmosphere, too. If I jump around, just go with me. That's how the spirit works. It flows. It goes wherever there's a container, a capacity to be filled. That's how the spirit works. It doesn't necessarily have to be like this. It flows. So if it goes, might hit you in one way, hit another person in another way. That's freedom. That's operating in freedom. But I like this amphitheater. God is so good. This is a blessed. This is a, in my faith, it's called anointed. That means that God has hoovers over it, has covered it. This is an anointed retreat. Law Mountain Highlands, this retreat's anointed. Every time I've come here, God's met me. That's not so in all. Sometimes there's different spirits operating. But at this particular retreat, I've always found that God has honored the labor of the workers. And that it has the fruit is evident in the atmosphere. So I appreciate that. I appreciate this retreat for that reason. Now, young lady, oh my God, who spoke with me? Louise. Louise spoke with me last year in this amphitheater. And I'll tell you what, the spirit was present. She did a ceremony honoring her husband who had passed away. Powerful. The root word of power is dunamis. It comes from the word dynamite. That is evident of what happens in explosion, dynamite, explosion, dunamis, power. And so in the 11th step, we seek through prayer meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and what? The power to carry that out. That's what we lack. We lack as much as we think we have it going on. We lack the power to consistently do what we need to do. And so, that for me, and where I'm at, and George spoke of it a little bit, having the capacity for God to fill. What gives me the container, or what creates, Beth and I did her 11th step up at the chapel last night. So the 11th step's on my heart. Okay, it's in me. I got more out of it than her. I do, this is good. This is good. Listen, the God of my understanding is faithful. Everything we need is in this literature. There is nothing that we go through in Narcotics Anonymous that cannot be addressed and healed and applied through literature, through our step work, and through our informational pamphlet. Sometimes it's in a service pamphlet. It's here. God is not one that He puts things where you can't find them. My God. The program of Narcotics Anonymous, all you got to do is take a look. It's in the book. They said you want to hide something from people and don't want them to know, put in the book. Our literature is fabulous. So God had laid the groundwork for me last night. And I'm so excited. That's why I'm going all over the place. I'm soaring. But let me come on down. Let me take my landing here for a minute. Because you have to be grounded too. It's not all up here. It's the valley, right? It's the pain that creates the capacity for the feeling, for the infilling that we need to continue in this journey. But in 1989, when I gave birth to my son, I was introduced to this fellowship because I was, when my water broke, I was smoking crack. So the authorities came into my life, said, you got to go to these meetings. Let me tell you something. When your spirit is dead and you're just going through the emotions, that's very short-lived. I went one time, looked through the window, said, look at all those weirdos. I am not going there. I don't care what they do to me. To hell with that. Literally. And they said, go on down here and get some treatment. I went for one, half the session, was in the evening, half the session, outpatient, and left them a note. This is not for me. I will not be back. As if I had a choice. Now, I was the type of dope in my addiction, I'd leave you a note if I robbed you. I owe you. So I thought I had some integrity. Yeah. Crazy. But let me tell you what that was. Because I understand what it was today. It was that little bit of a spark, an ember that was still left in my spirit. I knew God when I was a child, young. I had to suppress a whole lot of things in order to participate in my act of addiction. I knew things early on. I had like divine experiences when I was a child. They were necessary for me to survive my childhood. God made Himself real to me early because He knew I'd need Him to survive in my family. But for me to use, I had to push all that down. And even in my act of addiction at the end, I said, me, Vaughn, my husband, Barry M., one of my best friends, we'd always used together, sitting around smoking crack. And I said, we're not going to be like this forever. We're not going to be like this forever. That was that spark that was still alive in me. That little bit of life that was still in me, the spirit, just a little bit. That's all I had left. That's all I had left at the end of the road, was just a pinhole of light. Just a pinhole of light. And I almost gave that away. I almost gave that away. I knew I was getting ready to just shut the door on that too. That's where I was spiritually. I was just getting ready to basically sell my soul to the devil. I don't have any other words to articulate where I was spiritually other than to say I was just about, and God snatched me back. He said, literally snatched me back. He said, oh no, you ain't. Come on, you're mine. You going up here to Westmoreland County Jail. And sit on down. Now, I sent you there six times prior. And the seventh, perfect number. You get on and sit on down here. and we'll have a talk. We'll have a talk. That was my real introduction to the 11th step. I just didn't know it. But anyway, and it was in that desperate moment when I cried out, God help me. The most profound prayer that I know to mankind. God help me. And that gift of desperation, because I knew the minute I got out, and I had the evidence six times prior, that I was going back to what I was doing. They sent me to treatment. This area. I went to Ligonier Valley Treatment Center. That's where I went to inpatient. It's right in this neighborhood, ain't it?
Yep.
Stallstown. Right? Hi. Isn't it over the hill? Oh. What? Speak up.
Over the mountain.
Over the mountain. Right over here. No wonder this is such precious ground to me. Because I heard the most extraordinary thing there. H and I came in there. George shared about his experience. I was trying to take over everything, though. I was in such... I didn't know what was going on. But I knew I was trying to take over everything. But they said, you're sick. You're sick. You have a disease. And I'm telling you, it was like God himself came down, brought the choir, sang the hallelujah chorus. I couldn't believe that I finally discovered what was wrong with me. I wanted to know why I kept taking my mother's pocketbook and doing the things I was doing, because it went against everything I knew was right. I wanted to do right. I did wrong. No matter what I did, I never did what I was supposed to do. And so having that relief, having that moment, my aha moment of discovering what was really wrong with me. And thank God that we don't get everything at one time. And that goes for the good things and the bad. Sometimes you think, you know, if it wasn't for bad luck, I'd have none at all. I have no idea. I don't even know what I'm talking about in that moment. I really don't. But as God has been able to trust me more with this precious gift of recovery, more is revealed. And he would give it all to me because he's my daddy and he owns it all. But he can't trust me with it. And so had I knew the journey that I was going to have to embark on of change and transformation, I would have never continued. But this is a magnificent program, definitely divine in nature, in that you get just what you need right where your feet are. That's all you need, right there. Stay right where your feet are. You don't have to go, even though I did work all 12 steps in 30 days in rehab. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, I tried to carry this message to addicts and practice these principles in all my affairs. I wrote the newspaper. I told my family how they should change. I was a... advocate for recovery. Man, they said, who do you think you are? My mom talking about, you got a nerve. Mom, you shouldn't drink beer. You guys shouldn't do this. And then had nerve to be offended when they tried to back me up from it, right? What do you want me to do, use? I can smile at those things now, but at that time, I was serious. I remember, and I don't know why God, I'm just sharing what God puts on my spirit to share, and I'll bring it all together. When I was in early recovery, I wanted to do everything right away. H and I was one of the things that I wanted to do. And I wanted to carry the message into the Westmoreland County Detention Center, my alumni, and alma mater. I was an alumni. That was my alma mater. And I wanted to carry the message in there. Well, at that time, you had to have 7 years off paper. 7 years. Not to mention, my northeast area had a requirement of clean time that you had to have in order to have an H&I commitment. And so not only did I not have the clean time required to do the H&I commitment, I certainly didn't have no 7 years off paper. I was just working on about 9 months, right? But I want it all right now. So I go to the H&I committee, my husband and I, because I got him on this bandwagon too. Come on, honey, we're going to go, because we both, alma mater, right? They told us, you come back when you got the right clean time. No, you cannot have that position. That was an admirable thing in service. Because they didn't say, oh, you too, okay, let me check your blood pressure. Okay, you're living, let me check your pulse. You got a heartbeat, you can have the position. No, it wasn't like that. It was an honor and a privilege to wait. To wait. We had to wait and then go back in humility. Can we have it now? Well, we'll let you learn. You're going to be on a learning position for a year. And then we got to go back, right? And in the meantime, time's coming. Time's accumulating, a day at a time is being added. Then we had an ad hoc committee that went and we did it the proper way, the H&I committee. We went and had a in-service or a meeting with the warden and all that, to kind of go over what their requirements were and how that impacted the inmates and all this stuff like that. So they saw and they dropped it from 7 years to 3 years. And so eventually I was able to carry the message into a place that I wanted to carry the message to where I didn't hear it. Because at the time when I was in there in the early 90s, the only thing you could have in there was the Bible. This wasn't an option. You couldn't take a basic text in the jail. It wasn't allowed. You could only have the Bible in there. And so I remember coming from treatment and the night staff snuck me my basic text. It was like gold. It was like, you know, it was beautiful to me. I cried. I remember that. I remember the pain I felt when they wouldn't let me take it in. Because after I got out of treatment, they returned me to jail. They said, oh, no, this ain't your free get out of jail card because you went to treatment. You still have accountability. You got to see the judge, you know. So it wasn't just that simple. But anyway, what I'm saying is it was a process. And so it is with getting to the 12th step. All the things that I did in obtaining that H&I position and doing that lobbying or whatever I had to do to have a clean time knocked down. H&I, hey, what is it now at Westmoreland County Jail?
Northeast don't take in Westmoreland.
I know Greensburg does it, but do you know what the requirements are? I bet it's even lower. But anyway, I don't know. Somebody would know that information. But what I'm saying is, you have to do the process. You have to do the process to really appreciate the awakening. And it happens gradually. It's a progressive awakening. It's a progressive awakening. George described it eloquently, the caterpillar to the butterfly. You know, that's a great illustration of the process, but there are necessary steps that need to be taken to be groomed in order to be effective to carry the message. In early recovery, I try to sell drugs. And I'd be in a meeting, and they'd say, if anybody, remember, I have integrity. Early recovery now, I'm the best. Anybody have drugs, weapons, or paraphernalia, take them out and come back. I took that literally. Okay, run to the bathroom, lift up the garbage can, throw them a crack down, put the bag back, go back and get my meeting. Right? I'm upstanding and woman of integrity. I did what they suggested. Right? Man, I had one bad day. And I had it. I used it. I got a new clean date and a sponsor. because I was too proud to get a sponsor, because I wasn't going to allow nobody to tell me nothing. Second step. That was a very life-changing step for me. A lot of miracles in that step. I came to believe that a power greater than me, and at that time it was another woman who I would allow to tell me something, anything, speak into my life, be my ears and eyes. You understand? And then just the whole process of the steps. You heard it. George already shared it, so I don't have to belabor that. And everybody's experience, his experience with the steps is not mine. Mine is my own. It's personal. That's the magnificence of the God of my understanding, that he takes each of our journeys and personalizes it, meets you where you're at, does what he needs to do in order to make it real for you. So yes, while we may share some experiences, not one of us have the identical experiences on every step in every situation in everything in life. I'm going to say this and I'm going to be done. The greatest opportunity in my life today, and my life's work is about carrying the message. I do a lot of recovery work. My husband and I established a nonprofit in which that's the essence of it. That's what we do. Okay? And it talks about that in It Works How and Why. It talks about that, doing that work in the 12th step. It talks about that. So I formally do that because that's my life. My whole life is recovery. I live, eat, breathe, drink, sleep, recovery. My children. And George, I'm so glad that George's kids are blessed and doing what they need to do. And that's a hope shot for me. Because not a nary one of mine's really doing what they need to do. I got three of them. And the one that's doing the very best is sitting in SCI Somerset. My son. He's doing the best. He's in the therapeutic community. He's teaching it. He's doing the very best. My two girls, they're just shucking and jiving and smoking weed, cake, do this, that, all this bullshit. Excuse me. I didn't mean to say the word, but listen. That's the appropriate word. Sucking and jiving. In the meantime, they got children. They're called my grandkids. I love being a grandma, and I'm a good one. I love it. It's one of the most, I can't even put words in how wonderful it is being a grandmother. I love it. I never thought I could love anything more than my own children. But them grandbabies, I love them. They deserve an opportunity. They deserve an opportunity. And my daughters aren't very good at what, because they're caught up. But don't they deserve to be carried the same message? Aren't they the addict who still suffers? Yes, they are. They've said they are. I didn't tell them they were. My daughter's been in how many rehabs, mental institutions? I think she qualifies. And she keeps having babies. Every one she has, she gives the one former one to somebody. My mom got one, I got one, she got one. I mean, come on. But I have, and I love what George said. You don't browbeat them. And I used to try. I used to whoop their asses. try to beat it out of them. I used to try. We'd go all over that room, and my youngest daughter is strong as an ox. She tried to go toe-to-toe with me. And I was raised in the house, this is mine. And what I say goes. But that approach is somewhat passé. While I want respect, I have to give it. And I have to love them back to health. I have to love them back to health. Do you know what type of transformation that takes for a strong-willed, strong personality like myself who believes in old-school values? That takes a miracle. And so now I've been working on being loving and kind and caring and accepting their little victories as big things. I'm working on that. That hurts me. That really hurts my heart. But it's necessary. It's necessary. just like my son being in prison. Necessary. I believe God's preserving him. I think he'd be dead if he wasn't there. I really believe that. My kids, they have to go through their pain to embrace the promise. They see my life, that's the best I can do. I am real about what I'm doing. My clean time is real. This is my last statement. I talked to my sponsor. It's interesting because my phone wouldn't get any service. It got just enough service for my sponsor to get through to me. And I said, I'm speaking on the 12th step up here. She goes, well, let me tell you what I've learned about the 12th step. And I think this is worth mentioning. She says, the real awakening for me, I wish I was going to steal this and make it my own, but I'm going to give her the credit. She said, the real awakening is realizing after I worked all 12 steps that I wasn't perfect and that I needed to start again. And that's the essence of it all. After working all 12, I am become no magic woman. I don't earn my superwoman cape. What I do is take my butt in humility back to one. And that's where she got me. That's where she got me. Working step one. I said, oh, I did this years ago. No, Lori. One. Love you guys. I pass.